It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It has been a tumultuous year for the NFL regarding unsportsmanlike behavior. From use of the N-word by players off the field, like Philadelphia Eagles receiver Riley Cooper, to repeated harassment of Miami Dolphins player Jonathan Martin, led by teammate Richie Incognito, who frequently used racial slurs when bullying Martin. Now the league's competition committee is expected to discuss a rule where players would be penalized 15 yards for using racial slurs on the field. The proposal has received a less than enthusiastic reaction from players, including Seattle Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman, who called it an atrocious idea that is almost racist. I'm joined now by phone from New York by former first-round NFL draft pick Tim Green, who was a star linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons before working as an analyst for Fox Sports and an NFL commentator for NPR. He is the author of several books, including his latest novel, New Kid. Tim Green, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
When you were playing in the NFL, how common was it to hear the N-word used in the locker room or on the playing field?
Well, I'd say it wasn't uncommon for black guys to use that term, but I never heard a white player use it.
So that might explain some of the objection that Richard Sherman has. He and other African-American players are saying that we should still be allowed to use it, that it sometimes comes up, and to be penalized for it is ridiculous. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword. I understand both viewpoints because, not being an African American, it's my sense that the guys who use that word amongst themselves use it to kind of disarm it, and it's kind of a macho thing to say, I don't care, you can call me the worst thing you can call me, and but I'll use that as a term of affection among my friends. So I think that they use it to disarm it. For someone who's Caucasian to use it, it's abominable. I would never use it, and you know, I have kids in sports, and I've talked with them long and hard about how it's absolutely forbidden for them to use that word. And, you know, at first with my kids, they're puzzled because they'll listen to Drake and Jay-Z and those kinds of artists, and they're like, Dad, how can, if they say it, and then you have to go into the explanation. So I think that really it should be something that is determined by the black players in the league, not so much by the administration and the management.
And yet, as you say, for a white player to use the word is abominable, and you have heard the stories such as the N-word being used by Richie Incognito of the Dolphins to bully Jonathan Martin, and this is the behavior that the NFL wants to eliminate. So in order to do that, does it have to be an across-the-board rule? In spite of the objections of some African-American players, does this have to be supported as something that is necessary for the NFL to do in order to eliminate it at all levels and used by everybody?
I think while I can understand why it would bother some players, I think that the NFL's decision to, or their contemplation of just banning the word, is a positive thing because now it's simple. And now there's no, well, what was my intent? It's strict liability. It's an inappropriate word in so many ways that we're not going to allow it in the National Football League. And I think if I were an owner or if the league was my league, I would do the same thing.
Of course, a ban would include the use of homophobic slurs, which became a hot topic after Missouri defensive end Michael Sam announced he is gay and plans to become the first openly gay player in the next season. How do you think that he will be accepted if in fact he's drafted by a team and makes it to a team?
I think that people are going to be fine with him. I think that our society has changed dramatically. There's always going to be a couple people who are intolerant based on skin color, intolerant based on sexual orientation, intolerant based on religion. There's going to be people like that who are players in the NFL, who are coaches in the NFL, who are refs, who are fans, but you can't worry about the minority, and you have to worry about what your policies are And I think that the more people like Sam come out, you know, I think it's probably a difficult thing, but I think a brave thing for him to do, because people are going to have to realize that tolerance is tolerance and intolerance is intolerance. So if you are a particular religious group or have a particular nationality and you're angry because people are prejudiced against you, and then you turn around, but it's okay for you, you know, some of those same people turn around and say, well, you have a sexual orientation is something different. It's like, well, no, it's really not. I mean, you can't do that. So I think tolerance is always a good thing, and acceptance is a good thing. And I think once it's demystified and people realize that it really has nothing to do with the guy's performance as a football player, I think people are going to get over it, and I think he will be accepted. Just as much as anybody is going to be accepted on a football team, it's not universal. But football, especially in the NFL, is really about performance. And when guys perform, people tend to oversee a lot of their differences.
Are there any other measures that the NFL should look into to protect gay athletes or bullying?
Oh, well, that absolutely. Look, to me, that's just intolerable any place. And the NFL locker room is a workplace, and it's wrong and it's illegal for people to behave that way. And the employers have a responsibility. So I think it's outrageous what happened with Incognito. It's inexcusable. And I think that the Dolphins as an organization or any other employee, just like any, you know, I'm a lawyer, and when my clients allow inappropriate things to go on in the workplace, they're liable for it. So I think that holds true with the National Football League. It is a workplace, and teams need to be mindful and observant and proactive in making the NFL workplace a place of equality, acceptance, and a place where people can do their work without fear of being mistreated by others.
And that having been said, and everything you say, Tim, makes sense. There are, I'm sure, plenty of people who have the idea or the perception that bullying goes on in NFL locker rooms, that it always has, and how is this any different? What did you observe when you were playing? I mean, were there situations that got out of hand in the way that this apparently did in Miami?
No, I didn't see that. I mean, I saw guys saying things that were inappropriate back and forth to each other, but I never saw something where someone was being victimized by anyone else. I think probably is a bit unusual in the National Football League. You know, I'm sure it happens from time to time, but I think it's kind of unusual in that most of the guys, at least when I played, and it is getting to be a little while ago now, but most of the guys who got there weren't going to put up with that kind of behavior for very long before they just bloated and did something about it. But that's not to excuse it, and that's not to say that it doesn't happen, because it does. Is the NFL locker room a pretty rough place? Yeah, it can be, but that doesn't mean it has to be over the line, inappropriate, and hurtful to people, especially in that kind of abusive pattern.
We're talking with Tim Green, former linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons, lawyer and prolific author, and I wanted to talk about your book and also your writing, Tim, as a former athlete and as a coach and father. How have you tried to convey lessons of sportsmanship in your books?
I'm glad you asked that, Paul, because it's really an important thing for me. It's an important thing for me to teach when I coach kids. It's an important thing for me as a father to talk about these kinds of things, about hard work, perseverance, but also kindness and tolerance and generosity and loyalty and the importance of family and forgiveness, all those things that I have come to know as the most important things in this world. More important than fame and money are those qualities of character. And so I'm constantly reinforcing those when I'm coaching a team to win or talking with my kids about getting good grades, and certainly in my stories. I think the fortunate opportunity that I have as a writer is that I have this You know, I've sold over 1 million copies in this series for middle grade students. So kids in the 4th to 8th grade range, they're set in the world of sports, football and baseball. And so I just have developed a huge following in kids in that age range. A lot of them are athletes. A lot of them are kids who wouldn't otherwise be reading books. They're reading my books because of the sports angle, and I'm telling stories that are suspenseful with short chapters. And so there's a lot of action. There's a lot of excitement in these stories. But at the same time, I am very, very careful and intent on sharing those values with kids. And not in an overt way. They're not preachy or anything like that. But those are the things that happen. Those are the lessons in those stories that kids learn without even knowing that they're learning a lesson. And New Kid, which is just out now, is one of those stories. It's a story about a kid, and he learns what it means to have a father who's devoted, who's not all that communicative, but he's devoted to him. He learns what it means to forgive an adult who makes mistakes, but who has interest in him and wants to coach him and help him, and he learns it with his friends as well. So thank you for asking. I know it's a long-winded question, but after all, I am a writer, and I fill hundreds of pages with words, right?
Well, once again, you have a character from a single-parent home. What is the reason behind this?
Paul, I think so many... I like to write stories that kids can relate to, and so my characters, the boy characters and the girl characters, and I really love the fact that I get as many emails and messages on Facebook from girl readers as I do from guys, because I always put a great girl character, a main character in all my stories. And a lot of my main characters come from single-parent families because so many kids do come from that viewpoint. And I think that a lot of kids, you know, sometimes kids, even with two parents, a lot of times kids will feel broken. They feel like things are going against them. Things haven't gone their way. They have doubts about themselves. I think a lot of kids take problems at home, a broken family, I think they take that upon themselves and look at themselves and say, something maybe is wrong with me. I know I did that growing up. I was adopted as an infant, and I know that's something that kind of haunted me through my childhood. You know, I felt this kind of brokenness. And so my main characters have that brokenness, that quality, that element to them, because I think it's something that if it's there for you, it's something you have to overcome. And I think you can overcome it, and I think you can overcome it through sports, through coaching, through working, through training, and the camaraderie and the teamwork that you get in sports.
What were the challenges of writing for a younger audience after writing these legal thrillers, among other things?
The challenges were the language, having language that was a little bit simpler but no less active, no less descriptive. I solved that problem by reading every word aloud to my own kids who are in that age range and having them tell me that, you know, you got to stop me if there's a word or a sentence you don't understand. And then kind of the length of the stories, they're a little bit shorter. Really, my biggest challenge was the humor, because my kids told me I needed humor in these stories, and my idea of humor was, in their words, stupid and lame. So, you know, and I asked them, what's funny? You know, you guys tell me something that's funny. And basically, kids in that age range, vomit is funny, right? So I'm like, really, guys? And they're like, yeah, that's really... And, you know, honestly, I love writing these stories. I love writing for this age range because they're really not adults yet. They really are still kids, but they're, you know, they've seen so much and they're exposed to so much. But isn't it wonderful when you've got a group? And, you know, none of my stories, they're exciting and they're edgy only in the action and the violence that occurs on the football field or in the training for baseball. But the stories, there's no cursing in them. There's no sexual innuendos in them. There's none of that. They're very clean. And when you have a story like that, and somebody, you know, somebody throws up on somebody else, kids just love it. They think that's hilarious. And I really enjoy having that be the most risque element of my books.
Tim Green is a former star linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons. He was an analyst for Fox Sports and, of course, an NFL commentator for NPR. And he's the author of several books. His latest novel is New Kid. Tim Green, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You got a great show.
Thank you. Our pleasure. Coming up, An American Odyssey. We'll discover the newest exhibit on display at the Frick. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.